local filmmaker is premiering her film this evening in downtown Champaign's Art Theater. Healthcare in All the Wrong Places is satire. Filmmaker Susan Parente wrote and directed a collection of sketches showing patients and doctors going to the oddest places to get or give medical care because the regular healthcare system doesn't work for them. I'm Jim Meadows, and Susan Parente is my guest on Focus today, along with Dr. Patch Adams, the guy Robin Williams played in that movie from the 90s. They'll present their argument that our country's healthcare system, with or without Obamacare, falls short of serving patients and caregivers, and that they see a better way. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. For months, the national discussion about health care has been largely over the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and whether it's working. Our guests today say the debate over Obamacare misses the real issues with health care today, and they say, they'll correct me if I'm wrong, they say health care has gotten caught up in a corporate model of high-profit, low-investment care where the actual relationship between doctor and patient is all but ignored. And they say, and they talk about those results in healthcare in all the wrong places, that in fact these problems result in healthcare in all the wrong places. That's the title of the movie made by Susan Parente. She's one of the founders with the late composer Herbert Brun of the School for Designing a Society, also appearing in the movie and making, well, maybe his dramatic debut. We were talking about this a moment ago, but as far as I know, is Dr. Activist Hunter Patch Adams, known by many of you for a Hollywood movie based loosely on his life and work a few years back starring Robin Williams. Dr. Adams is in town for the premiere of Health Care in All the Wrong Places, which does not star Robin Williams, but it's showing tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the Art Theater in downtown Champaign. Susan Parente, Dr. Adams, welcome to Focus.
Glad to be here.
And, very tickled.
Okay. And we were talking about what medical care should be like, whether you're talking about that as a doctor or as a patient, whether you're thinking about that as a doctor or a patient, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again, 1-800-222-WILL. And you can also contact us on Twitter, on Facebook, at Focus580. Well, Susan, you made this movie, and you know, it's not like it's Michael Bay or anything like that, but it's, you know, it's work to make a movie. Why did you want to, what message did you want to impart this way?
I wanted people to be curious as to why all these people are roaming the town and looking for health care in the wrong places. The movie, in a sense, doesn't ask or doesn't present the right places. We really don't go inside a hospital or a clinic. It starts with the refusal of a person in a waiting room, which is the character that Patch plays, to wait. He didn't have an appointment. He doesn't have insurance. He has a pain, and he can't really get into the system. The receptionist tells him, well, 3 days from now we can see you. And so the movie takes as a point of departure someone who is refused by the medical system for all the usual reasons. And so people start looking for health care in a manicure parlor, a bank. So the message that I wanted is that people would say to themselves, why is it that we're looking for health care in the wrong places? It's a satire, a Monty Python-esque satire.
And why don't we go ahead and play a clip which presents Dr. Adams. You know, I was watching this in the waiting room. Where is that waiting room? Where did you find that waiting room?
It's Kevin Elliott and Sandra Otten's counseling room, which is right in Champaign. They gave us that location, and we're very grateful for
it. Okay. I thought it wasn't a regular doctor's office because it wasn't sterile and impersonal enough.
Right. No.
But you did your best.
Yes, and they have a great waiting room for their health care.
Well, let's go ahead and listen to this clip, which does feature Dr. Adams dressed pretty much as he is now in a good clown regalia, but playing a normal person.
Your appointment today is when?
I don't have an appointment. I have a pain.
I'm sorry, we don't accept walk-ins.
I didn't walk, I limped. practically grown. Monkeys have groans.
Okay, and that's you, Dr. Adams, wrangling with the receptionist at a doctor's office where you don't exist for practical purposes because you're not in the system and you don't have an appointment.
Right. I mean, what's so fun for me in Susan's effort is I entered medical school in 1967, and I saw nothing about health and nothing about care. It was a greedy, vulgar, hierarchical system where most all of the doctors were rude and arrogant and could treat anybody any way they wanted to, with everyone being silent, that old were treated different than young, pretty different than unattractive, rich different than poor, black different than white, and that there was never really a discussion of health. And there certainly was very little effort to have it look like care. So it was health care in all the wrong places.
I'm wondering, you're saying that's what, when you first went to the medical school, that's what you saw in terms of medical care in this country. That was like, what, 40, 45 years ago. Right. And I tell you, when I think 40, 45 years ago, and I think of medical care, the first thing that came to mind was Marcus Welby, M.D. And, you know, you can watch whole episodes of that now on YouTube. It was, if you don't know the show, it was Robert Young as your dream doctor, essentially. He made house calls. He was involved in your problems and your medical care. I actually thought there might have been doctors like him back then, but you're saying maybe not.
I think 95% of my professors were an embarrassment to the profession. And I'm now in literal written correspondence with medical people in 120 countries, and they're all saying the same thing. No medical school in the world teaches compassion, and that everyone is screaming for more time with patients, and the hierarchies and the frenetic, stressful environment. People are going, Marcus, excuse me, Dr. Welby, I know you're here somewhere.
But 40 years ago was before really what I think of as the current situation of large medical clinics and insurance and healthcare plans and the whole bureaucracy that came with it. Are you saying that existed back then as well, or was it a different way back then?
Well, there are a lot of things I think we could look at in 1967 that were really bad that are much worse. So what we have is a much worseness situation. So it was very easy for a thoughtful person to predict where it is going. I came in right when Medicare and Medicaid came in the 50s. Hospital bills could be $40 a night. And you could just see up close. I didn't get one lecture on wellness, on being well, not one lecture in 4 years. You could, on rounds, the person was the diabetic in room 403. And so if it had stayed that and not gotten as bad as it is today. But I think if we look at education, we could say the same thing, that it was really bad in 67. Now it's an embarrassment. And I think we could say the United States then had a lot to argue against, and I was in that argument. And now it's shameful. So I think that anyone who is conscious as an activist, they could say, yes, it was bad then, and wow, it's really tragic now.
And I would say that the film is trying to strike that nerve. What's been so interesting for me about healthcare is that people, that you bring up Marcus Welby, people really expect that when they're sick or someone they love is sick, and it's a very vulnerable, frightening, chaotic time period with illness, there's still a humane expectation that the medical system will take them in hand, will really take care of you. And it's still, and this is in the one field where there still is a shock that the system, not the practitioners, but the system can be so abusive, can drop them, cannot pay attention systematically. And I've really moved most of my activism to healthcare because it's, you can still feel people going, I can't believe this. I can't believe that they would do this. I can't believe that one night would cost $4,000. It's just beyond. And our indictment is really, in this case, the capitalist system is right at the core of this. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Affordable Care Act. We consider this a step, a good step, but we are radical activists. We think anything which is predicated on the idea that care is a profit location is already the seeds, the entire structure. You can just predict short-staffing nurses, small amount of time with patients, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And that, you know, that brings up the question, and when we're talking about the Affordable Care Act, we're talking about a system. When I look at this movie, what you seem to get down to very quickly is the relationship between doctor and patient.
Yes.
And you see that as really at the heart of everything.
Yes, yes. And yes, exactly. For me, it's having worked with Patch and the Gesundheit Institute.
And we should say the Gesundheit Institute is your institute, which is working to build a medical facility in Pocahontas County, West Virginia.
Yes.
Good homework.
Yes,
near
Jim.
Hillsboro, which I gather is a very small town.
Yes.
Birthplace of Pearl S. Buck.
Okay.
Nobel laureate.
I read The Good Earth in high school. I know her name.
Yes, good book.
But you've been working on that for several decades.
43 years every day.
And it's been a real fundraising challenge. Meanwhile, I gather the people most affected by the Affordable Care Act, which includes a lot of insurance companies, among other things,
yeah,
have probably done better in their fundraising than you.
Well, we've designed a hospital that eliminates 90% of the costs, where doctors and nurses will trade, certainly the doctors' large salaries for tiny salaries, for the privilege to be real doctors.
Right. Right. And this, what Patch is bringing up, is the other side of the film. It's not only that patients can't get care, it's that healthcare providers can't, in the present system, give care. So we have scenes that I thought initially were kind of outrageous, but I actually think they're more realistic than you know, where doctors are actually searching the town for patients. They want to provide care. They weren't able to do it in 7.8 minutes or whatever that was that they actually allotted. And so after work, we have them looking for patients, trying to redo what they had not done very well during their working day. So we're trying to show what Patch hears and what I hear. The cry is not only from patients, it's from providers. The Gesundheit Institute will create a system where doctors and nurses, CNAs, can really offer care in the way they want. Then we will have a health care system and not necessarily a health cure system.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. We're talking about how medical care works and how it ought to work. Questions asked in healthcare in all the wrong places. A movie written and directed and with music by Susan Parente, with support and a guest appearance by Dr. Patch Adams. They're both here in the studio this morning on Focus. Your questions and comments are welcome at 1-800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And again, the number, 1-800-222-WILL. And you can find us on Twitter or Facebook at Focus580. We were talking about, you know, the sort of scene you're talking about. We'll be playing a clip from a little later in the program. I wanted to go ahead and play another clip right now. And this is really showing a woman who is so looking so hard for any sort of health care attention that she brings it up to her mail carrier.
Look, I'm a mail carrier, not a doctor.
But you come here every day, rain or shine, except Sundays. That's continuity of care. Mm-hmm. And you come here to my house where I am. That's a house call. And you know a lot about me from my mail. That's personalized attention.
Well, I don't know anything about healthcare or medicine.
Well, there is that. But I can't afford a regular doctor who does know about healthcare or medicine.
Yeah, but I don't know anything.
And you, I see. So if I have to choose between somebody I never see and somebody I do see, you're it.
That's from that scene. And these are all local people, except for Dr. Adams, I take it, in the production. I recognized at least one person, the former Urbana alderwoman, Danielle Chenoweth, is in one of the scenes, not this one. This is a scene where someone is so desperate that she's ready to reach out just to anybody that she's seeing on a regular basis who wears a uniform.
Right. And this is funny because we needed to get a postal uniform, so I asked my mail carrier. I can't mention his name. He did give up some old uniforms. And when I was telling him about this scene of a woman in her home, we used my home, asking her mail carrier to just look in on her, just check that she's not dead that day, the mail carrier, the actual one, said, "That's not so unusual. We in Urbana do this all the time. We actually go inside. We don't mention it, but we have shut-ins, and we go in, we bring their mail, we make sure they're okay, we have stroke victims." He said, "We kind of do check in to people." He said, "It's not so unusual that mail carriers are actually acting a certain way, doing house calls in Urbana."
Is that a substitute? I mean, is that being used by some people as a substitute for what ought to be medical attention?
I've heard so many stories, huge numbers of people that live alone, especially elder people, that they, since I'm a big letter writer, they go to the post office, not necessarily because they have a letter to pick up or because they have a letter to mail, but because once a day they go somewhere where somebody says, "Hi, Joe." And quite frankly, it's a stronger antidepressant and anti-anxiety medication than the one they would get if they went to their doctor, because they're lonely. Or they know that if they go there and then into the florist shop and smell the nice flowers and the woman there is being kind to them, and then there's a bench that they know other people will be sitting on, that people are... They may not mentally be thinking, "I'm going for health care," but in the wellness model, you know you have to have human contact.
You have a scene in this movie that takes place in a manicure parlor, Susan, where essentially they provide that. If that manicure parlor also had a doctor, it would have been perfect, because they are right there. And it is capitalism, I guess, but they're right there. But it's capitalism where the...
Small C.
It's capitalism with a small C, where the person coming in is a direct participant, and they're ready to serve that person.
Right. Yeah. Actually, some of the things, let me connect the manicure parlor scene. Our friend Chris Evans plays someone who has a toothache, but what was funny is he actually did have a toothache, and he actually was refused dental care across the board in Champaign-Urbana. So we had the situation at hand. But let me bring this up. Both Patches, the Gesundheit Institute, and the School for Designing Society are constantly, we keep looking for places where there are change of models on how healthcare is being delivered, wellness models. One that we knew about was what they call now the grandfather system. It's in the East Coast, big cities, and this is basically where barbers and beauty shops have blood pressure cuffs, and they keep records. And this was an initiation from African-American men, where they recognized that most African-American men were not going to go into the hospital, did not want to, could not afford it. And so they decided to bring health care to where people are. Rather than people going to it, the health care went to the people, which was the idea of the house call.
At least at this point, you could get some sort of basic medical monitoring. You might still have to talk to somebody into following up on if they saw any problem and actually seeing a doctor.
Sure. We're certainly saying see a doctor. But if you look at models, and forgive me, but I have to bring up Cuba, has a wonderful model, because they actually have a clinic. They plan their neighborhoods around a clinic, and the nurse or doctor lives in that house. And they've understood that if the doctor or nurse sees and lives with the people all the time, 80% of the healthcare problems are already predicted. You know that someone drinks too much. You can predict that. You see that they're not eating proper things in the market. So there are models where, rather than isolating healthcare and making it a scarce commodity, which it currently is created as, rather than do that, healthcare is integrated within the community. If you look at a waiting room, the waiting room is the perfect model for what has happened to healthcare. There are all these people waiting. And if you go, excuse me, to our some of our, if you go to the emergency room, you know, it takes 2-3 hours sometimes to get in there. What is that, an emergency room? So there's all these people waiting. And then there's this kind of fortress that protects, allegedly, the doctors and nurses from the patients. So the doctor and nurse is a scarce commodity, situated that way. Up to 6 years ago, there hadn't been, since 1982, a new medical school built. Why? To keep care scarce.
And up to 6 years ago? So has something been happening?
Another medical school opened. There have been offshore medical schools, but not in the United States. And this is the mixture of the hubris of the medical profession and the capitalist model. The arrogance that we have such a small ratio of practitioner to patient is terrible. Okay, that's something I wanted to say.
As you were talking about that, I was thinking of one aspect of the current way, at least I see medical care planted out here in our immediate area, that I didn't see discussed in the video. And that is, I don't know what the industry name would be, but the clinics at places like Christie Clinic and Carl Clinic in this town offer so-called convenient care, where they keep long hours, where they'll take walk-in patients. There may not be many MDs out there. They use a lot of nurse practitioners. But from my experience anyway, it's easy to be seen, and people seem to be practical and to the point. And really aimed at, first of all, finding out what's going on and seeing what they can do right now.
Right, right. Yes, I mean, even Carl recognizes, with having nurses that you call in the emergency room, you know, the emergency room and the ICUs are the most expensive units in healthcare. And even Carl is trying to protect that from the overuse that the system has. But the thing is, with convenient care, let's just call it convenient. Let's not call that care. For me, care, and Patch, I'd like you to speak about this more. Care is follow-up. Care is a relationship between a doctor and a patient where there's a few tools and there's an interest. There's time so that both the doctor and the patient emerge as participants in each other's situation. The doctor calls the next day to know if a medication has worked. The doctor stops in and checks what the situation is at home. The patient gets to know the doctor, and the doctor feels visible and not burnt out. If this doesn't sound like your healthcare situation, then you know that's a utopian image that, for me, is very simple, should not be expensive at all. It should be $2, maybe. Patch, what do you have to say about healthcare? Where do you start?
I've been a free physician for 43 years, never made a penny in medicine. And I am one really rich physician. You know what's beautiful? I love people. That for me, my life has been centered around the intimacy of people. And a doctor has a trick. People want somebody to care about them, to talk with them. My initial interviews with patients as a family doctor have been 4 hours long. I get the privilege to ask every question of the most intimate nature. And if I appear to care for the person, I will know more than anyone else in their life.
4 hours, what are you talking about? And how does it apply to their medical care?
Well, let's say I'm reading a book right now, Why Dads Leave.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and 30% leave within the 2 years of the first child being born.
If they're going to leave.
Well, more than 50% leave now, moving up to 60% leave.
Wow.
And so a smart doctor would talk about these things before the baby is born. And that, so let's just take the issue of sex, that the dissatisfaction, if you have time to sit with a couple, an individual in a couple, and talk about their kissing. How do you make love? How, you know, what gives you pleasure? And their response can predict divorce, which is a giant health issue. So you want to understand, for me, what is the connection between cancer and your attitude? There's lots of studies. And so I want to know the person. What can I find out that'll help me understand not only would they ever exercise or eat healthy food? But what's an exercise that might not feel like exercise the first time they do it? Okay, so we tricked people when the 12 years our hospital was open, we tricked people into aerobics by having 2 to 3 all-night dance parties a week. We're not doing aerobics. And the ethic was to dance as long as you can. So it's to develop a relationship to... A lot of it is around prevention, since so much of this nation are on psychiatric medications, that you also are trying to develop a relationship with a person to where they trust you. They will call you up. Do this 12-year-old boy who went into school and shot people, maybe that's preventable. Mm-hmm. Maybe crystal meth, which is destroying the rural parts of America, maybe these things are preventable. And so...
So what you're saying is a 15-minute consultation.
7.8. In Spain, 5 minutes.
And Spain is a country with national health care, yes. I understand.
Right.
But you're saying that's you can't do it in that. You're talking about...
No person is that dull.
Okay, you're talking Marcus Welby territory here.
I want my ideal patient is somebody who wants a deep personal friendship with me.
How many patients can a doctor realistically have in that sort of situation when you spend that much attention on getting to know the patient?
Well, over time, a lot. Let's just say you did one a day.
Uh huh.
Okay, and. So let's say that you did that 250 days a year. So in the first year, 250, and by 5 years, let's say 1,000.
Okay, so you're saying you can see a lot of people
over time,
and you're saying it's competitive essentially,
and it's been proven to show that you have fewer visits.
Right.
The patients need fewer visits, and they'll come to you before.
The heart attack.
Before I can remember a case somebody said that somebody had a hernia in their scrotum, and it was brought in a wheelchair, okay? I mean, in a wheelbarrow. That's how big the mass was in the scrotum. And you may have wanted to catch that a little bit earlier, or that you get close to a parent that gets concerned about their child, and they'll call you, and they won't have to go through 3 phone calls and that sort of thing. And... since I didn't charge money, what is my reward? But if human intimacy and friendship, for me, which is the greatest experience life has to offer, I'm like swimming in gold every day. It's not about, I'm not making money from it. So it's not about numbers.
We're talking with Dr. Patch Adams and Susan Parente. Susan Parente's made a film about... medical care and maybe what it is and what it should be, called Healthcare in All the Wrong Places. Dr. Adams is in it, and we have a phone call. Let's say hello to Marlene on line 1. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Very interesting program. I'm looking forward to the movie tonight. But I have a question because I don't think we need actually a Monty Python type of approach, because I have actually experienced Monty Python type things recently in my own health care. But I'm just curious what they would say about this, particularly Dr. Adams. And that is 2 different things. One is a time I went in for a post-operative appointment with a list of questions, as I've been instructed to do. And the nurse practitioner looks at me and she says, "I see you have a lot of questions. We will have to hurry through these. And next time, if you have that many questions, you must request 2 appointments." Then the other thing was when I went into my doctor recently, my physician, and it cost me twice as $100 more to walk in the door than it did for him to see me. Now, I think this is big corporate America, and I'd like to hear what you say about it.
And maybe just following up on what you just said, Marlene, I'm looking at some background from the News Gazette reporting on the fee that Carl is now, they started when the fiscal year began in June, I think. Starting June 1, some Carl Physician Clinics will become outpatient offices of Carl Foundation hospitals, so patients will get two bills, one from the doctor, one from the hospital. The hospital bill, a $205 facility fee, although insurance coverage will apply.
Yes, and I requested information as to whether allergy shots would also entail a facility fee, which I would have to go to twice a week just for my shot. And I was told yes. So each time I walk in the door, it's mine was $260. So I think this is kind of Monty Python-ish.
Marlene, I think you need to rent some Monty Python films. I'm sorry. You're talking market capitalism, and if anything, Monty Python would make fun of that. Monty Python is absurdist playfulness. What you interfaced with was, a bunch of greedy bastards. I'll tell you, when I say Monty Python, our hospital never gave psychiatric medication. We used humor and love in extreme ways to help a person through their suffering. And that, you know, I'd like to say that I'm fun to die with. If I often ask audiences all over the world, if you only have a week to live, I'm your man. And I say, how many of you would like a fun death? And 98% of the hands go up in 72 countries. So the Monty Python I'm talking about is a playful absurdity. And I hear and am deeply saddened by the stories that you're saying.
Right. Yes. So Patch was trying to defend Monty Python, and I appreciate that. But also, Marlene, I think I wrote the movie because I was noticing what I wanted to show was exactly what's happening to you and make people go, what? I can't believe they're expecting this woman to hurry through. What? But I found that people are so resigned to the medical system. And we shouldn't be resigned. We should be up in arms. There should be pickets around these places. I've asked medical students, why don't you picket the medical system? You can see what it's doing to you. And it's just exactly a kind of a trap, because they've paid so much for their medical education. It's so difficult to get into medical schools that it looks like we are all on our knees before the capitalized healthcare system. And what you could do with the situation of having to pay a facility fee and a doctor fee, what can you do? What can you do when you're asked to, you know, have to set up an appointment, pay for, they were saying, two visits? And we've got Obamacare is a step, and we have to go way, way further, because healthcare is really just, it's going to become one of the biggest costs that anyone's going to have in their life. And it's trapping us, as you see with yourself.
Marlene, I wanted to thank you for your call, and we have another caller standing by. I'm going to take a short break first, and we'll get on to that one. We're here with Susan Parente and Dr. Patch Adams on Focus on WYLL. Welcome back to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking about healthcare and where it is and where it isn't. Our guests say it's not showing up in the places where it ought to be. Susan Parente is with the School for Designing a Society. She has made a new film, a collection of satirical sketches focusing on healthcare in all the wrong places. There's a guest appearance by Dr. Patch Adams. There's a showing of the film this evening at 7:30 p.m. at the Art Theater in downtown Champaign. Wanted to take a call on line two. Lawrence in Savoy, good morning. You're on Focus.
No, this is Bobby on line three.
Bobby, I'm sorry, Lawrence. We'll get to you next. But Bobby from Champaign, good morning. You're on Focus.
Okay. I just had a couple examples. In 1954, at the age of 10, I had a tonsillectomy. It involved an overnight hospital stay. We were on Social Security. We had no medical insurance, which didn't seem to be that necessary at that time. And my mother was able to pay that without any problem. So things have changed.
You're saying that wouldn't work now for, say, a tonsillectomy?
You can't walk into the doc. I mean, if you don't have insurance, and you're on a limited or fixed income, you can't even pay a walk-in visit. I mean, it's just impossible. As I have friends that are in that situation. Then I had an instance in 1982. My youngest child was 3 years old, and he broke his wrist. And he fell off a swing set, and I didn't think too much about it, but that was Saturday. Sunday morning, it was still bad, so I took him to the ER. And for the x-rays, he sat on my lap, which was comforting, even though that was painful. And then they called in the pediatric orthopedist, and he was very unhappy, I think, to be called in on a Sunday morning. And he refused to let me go in the room with my son. And he said, "Oh, it's gross. You'd probably throw up." Those are his exact words. And when I insisted that, no, I still wanted to go, he said, "Well, then you'll have to get someone else." It was that afternoon I had a convocation for my MSW. All my family was in town, so I didn't really have any choice. I wrote a complaint to the hospital and got a really, not condescending, that's not the word, but a letter that sort of said, "Well, you know, that's too bad." And then in 1990, when my mother was dying at the age of 91, she was in a suburban Detroit hospital. They didn't have any hospice care. And even I, as a layperson, saw that she was dying. And the resident insisted on shooting, I think it was potassium through her veins, even though it hadn't dropped below the, I think it was 3.5. He said, "Oh, well, it would be irresponsible of him not to do it prophylactically, even though it was very painful." And then her doctor, her regular doctor from outside, told my sister and me that she would prescribe morphine, but she didn't leave the prescription at the hospital. And when I pressed the nurses, one said, "Oh, we couldn't do that. That would be euthanasia." So those are just a few.
Well, I'm wondering, you're talking about three different instances. I think one positive, the tonsillectomy,
right,
many years ago, and two which were not. You could say they were isolated. Would our guests think of them as showing a progression of changes in how care is happening in this country?
Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely. There's nothing in today's medicine, in care, like there was in the 50s.
And you're saying that care was better in the 1950s.
I'm saying there was care.
I don't mean the state of medical science, but as far as access to medical care was different in the 1950s.
Yes, there was it was a lot nicer profession.
What happened?
Market capitalism.
Why did it happen?
Well, because greed has you by the cojones. When you're sick, the classic statement is, "I want the best money can buy," and they know you want your child well, so why not charge $2,000 where $10 is needed? So that it's such a perfect trap of greed.
Were there any other situations as far as rising expenses for medical care which put more pressure on the situation?
Well, a huge thing that happened was insurance. That insurance went from school teachers in Texas, and then Medicaid and Medicare, and the chorus in medical school, and you could hear it, and this was 67, was, "Don't worry about it, they're insured." Right. And insurance was a lot cheaper then, hugely cheaper. And people in my medical school order every test, do everything because they're insured.
You're saying is that unnecessary, too much unnecessary work was done in a lot of cases.
And even if it were necessary, if you can charge, take a colonoscopy, that you can go to on medical tourism and have a fabulous tour, say in Costa Rica, and get a $200 colonoscopy. Or here in America for $3,000 to $5,000.
Same quality of care, you would say?
Absolutely, yes. Susan and I have done it.
Yeah. I think what happened a little bit historically, the United States was the one country which introduced health care through the work situation. Because so much with healthcare has been ideologically pushed. After World War II, the European countries, everyone introduced national healthcare. But the United States, because of our ideological fear of anything having to do with taking care of all people, as known as ACA, communism or socialism, taking care of all people, there was such a fear that we introduced healthcare through the workplace. Lyndon Johnson then noticed that the old, the unemployed, the very young were not working. So he introduced Medicare and Medicaid, which have been fantastic, helpful for people. And there was a continuous rising cost because the machinations of the insurance industry, the hospital industry, all these middle person industries, too, were rising and rising. And so somewhere in the late 1970s, you'll remember this, we all will of this age, managed care. Doctors, because they were hierarchically organized, it was easy for them to say to the corporate care system, here, you guys drive. Costs are rising. Maybe the corporate system can reduce the cost of healthcare. And that was managed care. And I remember watching doctors say, we have not been able to increase access. We have not been able to lower costs. So maybe the corporation could do that. And from then on, things have escalated to an incredible level of greed, indifference. Doctors order all these tests. Why? Because they're reimbursed for tests. They're not reimbursed for care. Healthcare is a profit location. And to bring the movie back in, if you're interested in language, I was just fascinated by how the language of corporate care has eaten, swallowed, trumped any kind of language of actual care. And so for me, the movie is 14 metaphors of how the need for care is searching for a language which won't eat it, metastasize it. And so I think what we're seeing now is an absolute need for people to resist what has happened to care. Maybe corporations can sell you a bobby pin, and that's okay. And maybe corporations are fine when they're selling you a computer. But they need to keep their hands off healthcare.
Hey, I wanted to thank Bobby for calling in, and go to our now very patient caller on line 2, Lawrence in Savoy. Sorry for putting you off. You are on Focus.
Yes, good morning, all. If it happens again, I will hang up. Anyway, thanks to the excellence of Dr. Adams, I tolerated the last 20-25 minutes being on hold here. I have 3 quickies.
Okay, Lawrence.
Dr. Adams, would you be willing to share what medical school you graduated from?
Yes, I graduated from the Medical College of Virginia in 1971.
Excellent, sir. And Ms. Brenny, I think I'm going to come close at least here. There was either a sociologist or a law professor by the name of Parenti on campus 20, 30 or so years ago. May I ask, are you related in any way?
This is Michael Parenti, a fantastic writer. He was a political science person, has written fantastic books, and his son, Christian. Very, very distant relatives, very distant. Wonderful writers, both Michael Parenti and Christian.
Well, thank you very much. My last one I'll mention, and then I'll hang up and listen. I was particularly interested in Dr. Adams' ideas about what relationship all of this mess has to the fact that, I'd say sometime in the 1960s, medical colleges thought it was smart to bring in people to run the hospitals, and doctors would no longer run the hospitals. And this eventually led to there being this cadre of hospital administrators and degrees, programs formed for them, et cetera, et cetera. My editorial comment to my own question is, there's a big difference between bringing in a retired CEO of a major Fortune 500 company to, in his retirement days, run your hospital better for you, and the average hospital administrator. So that's my question with a little comment, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Lawrence, thank you very much for your call.
I'd like to say something that might excite you, Lawrence, that if a not-so-abnormal insurance payment for a year is $14,000 for a family, if 10,000 families in a geographical area put that money to themselves, in the first year, that's $140 million, which just happens to be how much I need to fully build and fully endow our hospital. And that's in the first year. And it could be a way to really coordinate huge numbers of other activities for a given community of mutual care. One of the things Susan and I were lecturing in Australia, and there were, just as there are libraries for books, there was a library for toys. And everyone knows on Christmas you get your kids a bunch of toys, and by February they're not playing with them. But if there was a toy library, a kid could get really excited about a toy, and then when they got tired of it, put it. And the same thing could be done with lawnmowers. It could be done with cars in a neighborhood. And so at our hospital, all the permanent staff will live there with their families on one piece of land as a communal eco-village. And so normally in medical families, each person would have a car. So there would be 120 cars in the normal system. In our system, you would need about 25 cars. And so that what capitalism relies on is that you want your stuff, your space, your house, and no sharing, because God forbid sharing starts sounding community, and community is close cousins to communism. And so, you know, ladies and gentlemen out there, banded together, we can do lots of really great stuff cheap.
We're talking with Dr. Patch Adams and Susan Parente. Susan Parente's film, Healthcare in All the Wrong Places, will be shown at the Art Theater tonight on in downtown Champaign. That's at 7:30 p.m. This is Focus on WYL. I'll have just a moment. Let me run the third clip that we have available from Healthcare in All the Wrong Places. And this is where I think you were getting into the importance of the relationship between doctor and patient, and the importance to a doctor. And this is a case where the doctor essentially runs after her patient in an auto garage, and so that she can see her again.
Mrs. Hillman, I want to apologize for today's office visit. I am so sorry. That was a complete farce. In 7.5 minutes, I cannot be a doctor, and you cannot be a patient.
Well, it was speedy. You did get a lot done. You ordered some tests. Your diagnosis was...
Ordered some tests? Yes, I have to do that to get reimbursed for the office visit. And diagnosis, that's all it was. We need a diagnosis. That's why I'm here. I wanted to see if we could do it all over again.
Now? Oh, but doctor, I really need to get home. It's after 5 and
I can come with you. This way we can talk while you drive.
Come with me? But I live half an hour away, and I've got to stop at a grocery store.
It'll give us plenty of time.
Okay, and that's from another scene from Healthcare in All the Wrong Places. We're down to just about the last minute, so I'm going to ask you, Susan Parente, to go from here and from the moment you were presenting in the movie there. What do you want people to take away? What do you want people to start thinking about from this film?
I want people to realize that the system is fundamentally flawed. Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, is trying to increase a lot of things that wouldn't happen without it. And for that, one needs to go, great. It's a good step. But we need to keep pushing. We need to connect with our providers. Champaign County Healthcare Consumers is doing a great job of increasing access. We need to connect with providers and patients and do what Patch is saying. We need to band together and change the system, which is really not in the interest of the healthcare providers and not in the interest of patients.
And how do you plan to get the movie seen besides tonight's showing at the Art Theater?
We are distributing it on the Gesundheit, patchadams.org website, and also on the School for Designing Society, designingsociety.net website, and we'll be probably going to Chicago and various other towns and doing showings in independent theaters.
Okay, and we'll get links to those websites if they aren't already up on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. Susan Parente and Dr. Patch Adams, thank you very much for being on the program today.
Can I make a final statement?
Final statement. A quick one, I hope.
Yes. if you like what you've heard, I want you to feel the thrill we have in nonviolent revolution. If you want to do something good for your health and the health of your grandchildren's great-grandchildren, change the world to a loving, caring world for all people everywhere.
Dr. Adams, thank you very much. Thanks to all of you who called in today. Our apologies if we weren't able to get you on the air. You can continue the discussion at will.illinois.edu/focus. Today's show, produced by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft is our technical director. Coming up on Focus tomorrow, it's the 21st century, but do women who work in science and technology still face resistance and harassment from men, especially once you get online? We'll discuss the subject with U of I anthropology professor Kate Clancy and Emily Grassley, who hosts the video blog The Brain Scoop for Chicago's Field Museum of Natural History. That's coming up on Wednesday's show. Remember, Focus is live each weekday morning at 10 a.m. with a replay at 8 p.m., but not tonight due to the President's State of the Union address. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WILL.